Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, January 4th, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the LL Research websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number four, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
Fairly well. We're both a little bit under the weather with the seasonal viruses, the cold that's going around, but I think we're making our way through it okay.
Yeah, I think you're... So well, just when Carla's getting over it, then now you're getting it. Oh no!
Yeah. Well, hopefully, if one of us is incapacitated for some reason, the other will pitch right in.
Yeah, that's usually good. Yeah, good. Well, we actually got a little bit of cold weather down here. We almost got a little sleet and snow last night, but not so lucky. It's a big deal to us if we get something like that. It happens so rarely. But doing good. It just felt strange to say 2013, you know, with this big 2012 looming ahead for so long, and now it's past. So that's kind of strange feeling there. Well, we have some different questions tonight, not just about 2012. Maybe we can put that behind us a little bit. We may still have, I think there was still one question about it, but we've got some other stuff to talk about as well. So I'm going to go ahead and go on to the opening riff for today. And this is from Kuo, October 14th, 2005. You're tuning as of this pleasant autumn day that we enjoy seeing and listening to through this instrument's eyes and ears has almost nothing to do with what will occur when you or anyone else in this situation actually enters the gates of the larger life and so becomes eligible for graduation. The only consideration for graduation at that time will be your tuning at that time. It is very helpful to do work day by day, week by week, and month by month. That kind of dedication and persistence is always fruitful in accelerating the pace of your spiritual evolution. However, graduation is not a test that can be taken beforehand, nor is it a test that can be studied for in the sense of cramming for a final, as this instrument would say. When we speak of the word tuning or consider the vibratory energy that you hold at a certain moment, we are not speaking of anything physical. We are not even speaking of the weak electrical charge of your thoughts. That is an artifact of third density and space-time. We are speaking of that tuning which is a true reading or readout of your state of mind at any particular moment. The tuning that you have at the moment of your entry into the gates of larger life may be radically different from your tuning at this time. We are in no position to know your future. Each choice that you make between now and the moment of your death, whenever that is, will readjust the vibratory energies of your energy body and will change your readout. This process will go on in a completely open and fluid manner until the point at which your consciousness separates from your physical body and enters through what this instrument has called at times, in a somewhat joking manner, the pearly gates. We call them the gates to the present moment, the gateway to intelligent infinity, or simply, as this instrument terms it, the gateway to larger life.
Thank you, Monica. Sometimes it seems to me to be a good thing to just to look at how we polarize. It often seems a mystery to all of us, and we think, well, when I know that I am close to death, I will work hard at lifting my polarization up and thinking about love all the time and keeping my heart open so that I can cram to pass the final, as I said. And then in other ways, certainly the Cathars of France were an obvious example. They were a group of people who felt that you could ascend into heaven and sin no more. And people would make choices to do that and then remain sinless and blameless. And, of course, when any difficulty occurred which caused them to choose a less than totally perfect way, they were in a muddle because they thought, oh, but wait a minute, I'm a Cathar, I've ascended. What do I do with this? So here's the deal on how we work towards graduation. We work towards it from choice point to choice point. And we work towards it every day as we tune our state of mind. And how often have you awakened? In a state of mind that is grumpy and just, you want to turn over and go back to bed. It's just a terrible beginning to the day. And what do you do to make that better? Well, if you want to take a shortcut that really works, you can think about all the people in your life that might need a call. One of your relatives in an old folks home you haven't talked to in a while, a classmate if you're in school that has been having trouble lately, a lover, mate, or husband that might need a cheerful hello. And you enter into a relationship with them, you know, give them a call, go see them, and try to be of service to them. And you discover that as you are being of service to them, the very activity is lifting you up so that you no longer feel that, you know, everything is bad in the world and you want to go back to bed. You're starting to feel human again. You're starting to feel like, yeah, I can do this. This is a good day. You're starting to be able to notice the beauty around you in the world of nature. You're starting to be able to forgive yourself when you make mistakes. And when a choice point comes, hopefully you recognize that. You recognize that you have a choice between reacting or responding in love or reacting or responding in some kind of fear, anger, some negative emotion. Sometimes it's really difficult not to indulge in negative emotions. I have had, you know, people in my life like the homeowner from hell that was renting his house to us. I was the one that was responsible for negotiating things with this guy, and he would do things like, even though when we tried to wash the curtains, they fell apart. There were no longer any curtains. He said that we had destroyed the curtains and we needed to replace them. You know, that kind of complete turnaround where you want to shake the guy and say, don't you understand that you are, you know, a renter and you have responsibilities to us, you know. Well, no, we didn't. He didn't feel that at all. He was never going to feel that. Luther was a demon of some kind, as far as I could tell. He never had a positive reaction in his life. But the work here, you see, is to choose to keep him in your heart, to choose to see him as a soul and one with yourself, in spite of all of the things that he was doing that were hurting you and causing you to spend money. So I've been there. It seems like no matter where you are in life, there's always one person, you know, that is going to bring out the worst in you every time. Well, prepare for that, guys. Prepare for that. Get ready. Psych yourself up and say, I am going to include this entity in my heart. This entity is a child of God. We all are children of God. We are all equal. He doesn't know it. He's not acting like that. But I know it, and I can treat him like that. It's hard, but it's so helpful to your tuning. It causes you to think, maybe I can always find a way to react positively to this situation. So what you're doing through the years before you enter into larger life is you're training yourself. You're training your state of mind. There is a reaction many people have to this kind of talk, and they say to me, but Carla, I want to be, you know, real. I don't want to keep working with my state of mind to make it something other than it is. If I'm angry, I want to be angry. If I'm upset, I want to be upset. If I'm bummed out, I want to be bummed out. That's one way of looking at things. But as far as I'm concerned, if you decide to do that, you're losing your opportunities for choice points. You're losing the opportunity to tune your state of mind so that you're better company to yourself, so that your heart stays open and you have a better day. You know, just because you're enjoying life. Why not tune up to that point? I think it's a great thing to do, and I do it constantly. And, yeah, I've got reasons sometimes to get bummed out. I mean, you know, I just got word. I don't know if you know this, Monica. I just got word the other day that the MRI that I took recently showed that the lumbar vertebra below the ones that had been fused is shot. Now, I can't remember the word the doctors used. I've thought and thought, but it means disintegrated. It is no longer there. Yes,
oh, dear.
It has to come out. So I'm thinking, okay, how do I tune in this? And then I get this really bright idea. What if the reason my previous surgical wound has never healed because of this problem right there, you know, at the surgical site. What if when I go through this operation I can now heal where I couldn't before? What if this means that I can learn to walk again, which I was pretty sure was not going to happen before? And so I'm finding ways to look at the operation to come with some positive feeling and thinking, well, this is going to help. This is going to make things better in the long run, even though I'm really not a good candidate for an operation ever because, you know, it's so difficult to find a vein, you know. They always have to find not just one, but two or three, and my veins blow constantly when they're doing that, and they have to find another vein, you know, so it's a hassle. And then if you have interstitial cystitis and you're in the hospital and you have to go to the bathroom every half hour and you've got recent surgery, you've got a problem. And I suspect that I will have a problem. They'll probably have to do something to help me out. So, I'm not saying that it's not going to be difficult, but I'm saying that I have found ways to praise it and to encourage myself to embrace it, because this is the road towards full health, you know. If it were something that were less than spinal, I might feel less like having an operation. But this is really just structural. This is the structure of my body. And when there's something wrong with the structure and they say, yeah, I can fix this, well, I am tending to want to go there because, you know, it's a matter of fixing the bones that aren't working and getting the bones out of the way of the nerves. So I would be far more tempted to say I do not want this operation if it were less important, you know, to the structure of my body. If it were something where, well, if we operate on this finger, it'll work better, you know. I don't care so much about that, but I would love to be able to walk again, even if it was just a little bit. Right now, I'm doing really well if I can walk a couple steps from here to the bedside potty. And that transfer is all important in terms of people helping me out. I would love to be able to help myself more. Right now, my beloved husband has to do everything from brushing my teeth to giving me a bath to dressing me, and it's changing the bandage twice a day. This is serious stuff. So, you know, it would be wonderful if I could take responsibility for more. So I'm looking forward to it that way. I think there are always ways that you can look at the gift that the Creator has given you that's such a challenge and find ways to look at it positively. And the reason that it's important is that it's a habit. You're building a habit so that when you do enter the gateway to larger life, you have a solid habit of responding to the things that happen to you with thanksgiving, with joy, with a smile, with a big hug and a big smile. These things don't come easily sometimes, but if you get the habit of that and you get the feeling of how that feels, how your life feels when you are living in love, it really is a kind of heaven on earth to do that. So whether or not it helped, it would help at the end. It would be a great idea to tune yourself on a daily basis. And the best way to tune yourself, I think, is to dedicate your day to the Creator. Make that intention the beginning of your day. Jim and I do that. And I don't know how well we're, you know, doing with that dedication, with that intention. But we're extremely sincere in making it. And, you know, it gives you a good start to the day. And then, you know, you just have to keep noticing when you start falling away from feeling peaceful and joyful and good. And sing a favorite song or read a favorite passage that inspires you, or pray, or chant, or whatever it is that you do. Walk in nature. I mean, there are so many ways to get your feelings back in order. And I really encourage you to join me in that walk, to find ways to hear the birds sing and see the beauty of life. Come join me. Maybe you can watch me fall down and help me get up. That certainly can happen. Come join me.
Wow, thank you for sharing all that, Carla. That's really an inspiration. I mean, really, if you, with all the ailments that you've had to deal with can make that choice on a moment-to-moment basis, then, gosh, I think the rest of us ought to be able to do that, too. So that's really quite inspiring. So thank you so much for that wonderful advice.
Thanks, Monica.
We have a live caller. I'm going to unmute. Hey, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, my name is Cyril.
Hi, I didn't quite catch that. Could you say that again?
Cyril.
Okay, I'm not even going to attempt that, Carla. Go ahead.
You like Siri.
Okay, great.
Hi, I think you've called us before. It's good to hear your voice again, sweetheart.
Yes, I had called before, but I had called today to listen.
Ah.
Okay.
If you don't have a question, then we'll just mute you back.
I'll just mute you back. It had a star by your number showing that maybe you had pushed the one key, and that's when you do that, it tells me that you want to join the show. But no problem. If you decide you do have a question, just hit the one key again, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. Well, in that case, I'll go to our first question, which is from Carl. Carl says, I have extremely dense, compacted orange ray. Is that synonymous with Lucifer? I've had someone talented at psychic readings look at it. It's consistently dense. I've been told I'm very territorial with my energy. It also feels compacted, almost like a gravity well or something. This is from Carl.
Okay. Jim, you butt in if you have something to say, but what I would say to that is, no, it's not anything like Lucifer. What creates the possibility of negative polarity is if your red, orange, and yellow rays, especially the red ray and the yellow ray, are extremely powerful, and your blue ray is also extremely powerful. Those are the three major rays that, you know, are the primary rays, so-called by those of Ra and the Confederation. And also, it would mean that you would completely skip green ray and have no interest in love and have no interest in opening your heart. So a densely compacted orange ray simply means that you are struggling with some personal problems to the point where you're kind of, you know, stuck in the mud. And when you're working to get rid of the overactivity of a ray, one of your rays, you don't start with that ray. You start at the very bottom, and you start with red ray. Okay, what's going on with your red ray? Is it a happy ray? Are you happy with your life? Are you glad to be alive? Are you glad with your sexuality, whatever it may be? Straight, gay, whatever. If those issues in your red ray are good, then you go on to the orange ray. Now, I don't know what's overactivated. Personal relationships come to mind, but I don't know if it's your relationship with yourself or your relationship with somebody else. Are you having difficulties with somebody else, or is this a way of looking at yourself, a way of relating to yourself that causes you to be very intense and overactivated in orange ray? Now let's look at yellow ray. How's your yellow ray doing? If it is flowing pretty well, if you have no particularly, you know, gross and horrible issues with your work or your family, your birth family, your marriage family. That's what yellow ray is about. It's about the legal relationships in your life. You know, what's going on there? And then what's going on with your green ray? Are you attempting to keep your heart open? Do you see that as a positive thing to do? And are you doing that? And what's going on? Do you keep your heart open enough, even though the orange ray is overactivated, that you are able to move from the open heart to the blue ray? sounds to me with such an overactivated orange ray, you wouldn't be able to work with a blue ray yet at all. The blue ray is the ray of the throat, and it involves not only honest communication, but loving communication. It's that grace that you receive when your heart is open and you're able to talk to people to give them exactly what you think, but in a way that does not hurt them. I have done this many times, and believe me, it's possible, but it takes focus, it takes concentration, and it takes a lot of work to be dedicated enough to reject all of the things that you could easily say, but that would not help, and find the things to say that are full of grace and full of love for the other person, in addition to being full of truth. So I hope this helps a little bit. That's my analysis of the situation. It doesn't sound to me like you're anywhere near a negative entity. It's just that you're overactivated, and you need to think about this orange ray. You need to think about your relationship with yourself and your relationship with the people in your life that are just boyfriend, girlfriend, or whatever, and find out why you've worked so hard and gotten so overactivated in that ray. Mickey, what would you say?
Well, if you take a look at your daily round of activities at the end of your day and use the balancing exercises that Ross suggested, then you would, in your meditative state, look at anything that might have occurred that would be within the framework of the orange ray that Carla was describing, your relationship with yourself or with a neighbor, a friend, a lover, office manager, whatever relationships you have on a one-to-one basis, and see if there's anything going on there that stands out, anything that might need a balance. And then in your meditation, you would reimagine that experience that you had during the day and let it get large, let it get intense.
Like
let,
even more out of balance.
Right. Let it go wild, and then be silent and peaceful, and let the polar opposite arise in your consciousness so that it begins to get larger and larger until they're both equally large, outrageous even. And then accept yourself for having both of these means for the Creator to know itself contained within you. If over a long period of time you do this, whatever rays have an imbalance in them will become apparent to you as you observe your own spontaneous reactions in your daily round of activities, so that this becomes your classroom. Your life becomes the means by which you can progress. And that's really what all of our incarnations are for, is to provide us the catalyst that will generate our intention and our desire to learn and to balance it. The distortions that we have are not bad things. They're ways of pointing out to us where we have the opportunity to learn, the opportunity to balance, mm-hmm. and to go forward on our spiritual path.
Sometimes, you know, it hits you. Oh, my gosh, that's what it is. And I can remember, quite a few times when Jim's awakened in the middle of the night, you know, Ruck, what are you doing? And I'm telling him, I am working. Leave me alone. I've got something to work on, and I'm taking this opportunity. I finally get it, what I need to work on, and so I'm working on it. Okay, well, you know, when you get a chance, have some sleep. But, you know, the dead of night is a wonderful time to work on that because everything is still, you know. Other people are also in bed, and the energies of the day are quiet and peaceful, and you can really get some work done. So if you're up for some reason, you're going, what am I doing up? Well, think about it. Did you do the balancing exercise today? If not, have a go at it because it's the very best time to do it.
So that's why I had all those sleepless nights all over those all those years.
You never know.
Aha! That explains it. Okay, I've done that balancing exercise many times and with great success. But I remember one particular time on a particular issue that just had to do with something personal. It didn't involve anybody else. And I went through the thing, and I couldn't get the positive. I couldn't get the polar opposite to happen.
Oh, you couldn't get it to come up.
Yeah, what do you do when that happens? And then I thought, oh, no, what have I done? I just made it worse. So, I never did. I still haven't gotten that particular thing resolved. So what would you recommend in that situation?
Well, I would scoot it along with creating it within myself and going, is this what you're looking for? And seeing if your mind will take a hold of it and use it. try to help a little bit. Usually, you know, the thing that the positive that you're looking for has to do with love, and so it's not so hard to, especially if you ask for help. And that's one thing I ask the Holy Spirit, who I consider my inner guide. I ask the Holy Spirit for help a lot, and she'll give me very basic good advice, and will help me with stuff like that. It's very helpful to have somebody along that is, you know, wanting to help you and able to give you a few words. Otherwise, you're pretty well stuck with your own intuitions. But, you know, sometimes you can do that and your own intuitions are perfectly adequate to the situation. It's just a matter of scooting yourself along a little bit and saying, now, I think that what I want here in the positive sense is something like this. Can you use this? Can this become larger? And, you know, you have an intention and you put it in there and see if that is accurate enough to grow.
Okay, so it doesn't always just appear spontaneously. You sometimes really have to visualize it and work with it.
Yeah. Sit along, yeah.
And then even then, if you're having trouble, does that mean there's a blockage?
Yeah, and, well, then you keep on, you know. You don't quit. The next night, you do it again. Next night, you do it again. And, you know, eventually there's going to come a loosening because of the perseverance that you have and the persistence. Mm. And I think most things yield to persistence. But a little persistence isn't as good as a continuing persistence. You know, example, this is not the same kind of thing, but in a way it is, too. I had a 45-page manuscript, a transcript of the audio from an interview that I had done with a lady named Raylan Allen. Very interesting lady. Been all kinds of things have happened to her. She was chased by the CIA. She was shot at. You know, became a bishop in a New Age church that nevertheless had an apostolic succession all the way back to Peter. She has enormous integrity and many, many, many stories to tell, and it's a wonderful interview, and I ended up having to edit the first part of it three times. Firstly, I edited 26 out of 45 pages, about half of it, and the thing disappeared from, you know, when I opened it up. It was laughing at me. It was a page from my daily blog. Oh, good. And that's not going to help. So I started all over and got to page 20. And when I opened it again, all the editing past page 14 had been lost.
Oh, no.
And I distinctly remember doing these things. You know, you remember, you know, doing it. You're sitting here doing physical changes. Let's see, I have to take that out. I have to put that in. That's spelled wrong, you know. And I had to do it three times. And I finished it today. But I thought I would never, ever finish it. It went on for so long. But I finally finished it today. And I'm so glad to have it done. So you just have to keep on keeping on and not give up.
Boy, I remember I've had things like that happen back when I worked as a computer programmer, losing a day's worth of work or more. Okay, thank you, Carla. That's very helpful. I'm going to go to our next question from Tenant Noske. This question is a little bit long. I'm going to try to zip through it as quickly as I can. Can you elucidate the tenuous link between David Wilcock's concept of ascension and what was actually said in the raw material? There seems to be a big question mark as to how this link was made and why it was never openly refuted by LL Research. As near as I can discern, more details on the nature of the relationship between LL Research and David Wilcox circa 1996, when the spinoff into Ascension2000.com occurred, may shed some light on how such a distorted interpretation of the raw material became injected into the mass consciousness. I'm thinking of the perspective of those who come to the raw material having taken at face value that it says certain things which it does not.
Okay.
From the very okay, yeah, there's a little more. Let's see, I think you probably read the whole thing, but I'm going to read just a little bit more.
Why don't you go down to the bottom? False prophecies happen all the time.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Some of these ideas were, false prophecies happen all the time. The question is, when prophecies inevitably fail, do people continue to issue false prophecies instead of ceasing to make prophecies altogether? And why do others continue to believe in false prophets even after they are proven wrong time and time again?
Okay, I think there are a couple of things here that we can go into, and I'm sure that Jim will catch the things that I miss. First of all, I was ignorant of Wilcox until he came to a homecoming of ours in 2003. Jim, you correct me if I'm wrong. And I sort of took it over. And he really liked being here, and he said, could I, you know, move here? He didn't have any place to go at the time. He was having to leave the place that he had been living, and he had absolutely no idea what to do with his furniture, you know, with his life. And I said, well, come on, you know, you can live here. And I gave him a price, you know, a rent. He was a renter here, and he always paid his rent. He was a good renter, except that he did, when he left, he just had totally destroyed the room. But he didn't see that. No, sometimes you can't blame a person for what he doesn't see. Anyway, it was in 2003 that I became aware that David said that he was channeling Ra. And I tried very hard to talk to him about that and got him to say publicly that whereas he was channeling his higher self and he felt that he was a Ra wanderer and his higher self was therefore from Ra, it certainly wasn't the same thing as the Ra group. So while he was with us, he went to that point of view, and we were able to get along together. We never fought. Now, he always, when he channeled, injected some personal material into his channeling, which means that he was detuning like crazy. And I was very uncomfortable working with him. And after 3 attempts at it, I told him I would no longer do it. And the 3 times that I did it, if you look them up in our archives, you'll see that I put a little note in there that sort of made a distinction between David's channeling and my channeling. And that's as close as I ever came to expressing an opinion about his channeling. Now, you have to understand that people have a tremendous amount of ability to know what's good for them and what's not good for them. But they also are very willing to give it up if they can lock on to what somebody else said that they think is going to give them the right stuff. Consequently, I have never felt comfortable, even when my personal opinion was far from thinking that that was a positive channel. I never, ever said that. What I do is I ask people to use their own discrimination, and I tell them that they do have it, that they are capable, that they can distinguish what is right for them, you know. And I say, look, here's the way positive channeling works. when you come out of positive channeling, you feel uplifted, you feel happy, you feel glad that you were there. When you come out of negative channeling, you have fear. You want to go buy a place in the country and, you know, put some food in the basement so, you know, when it all falls apart, you'll survive, you know. I mean, there's an obvious difference between positive and negative channeling. So I've given people those tools to use, and I've asked them to distinguish for themselves what's going on. And I never will criticize another channel. Because even when the channels go just so terribly wrong, you have to realize that there's nothing out there for them except my little book, the Channeling Handbook, which I think 37 people have read all together. I mean, it's still in print. You can get it if you want it. But most people, when they start to channel, they feel like they know what they're doing. They know, they recognize their channeling source. They know how it feels. And the fact is that you can never know for sure whether you've got your source unless you challenge it. Because of the fact that negative entities that want to use you are so clever. They know perfectly well how to use the light to mimic the channeling source that you're so comfortable with. And then gradually they begin introducing negative things. As my friend Janet used to say, it was like, I love you, I love you, I love you, and then stab with a sword. I love you, I love you, stab. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, stab. So, you know, that's what mixed channeling feels like. So people don't know that they're doing it. They have no real way of pulling it back because they haven't read my book. I'm the only one, I think, that ever said, okay, let's figure this out. I mean, I'm a librarian. I'm not psychic. The reason I got into channeling was because my research partner, Don Elkins, had been running an ET channeling experiment for, 12 years, 62 to 74, and I'd been there the whole time. Did not want to channel, had no interest in it. I liked the silence. I liked the cosmic sermonettes, but I had no desire in producing them. And then all of the people in the group, you know, left one by one. They left to take jobs in other places. I mean, these were engineering students when we started out. I was 19. Everybody was 19. You know, he got people in his physics class. And as they got older, they got jobs. They got called away. There was nobody in town that was a channel anymore except Don himself. And he was not a person that liked to channel. So he said, look, I really need you to continue with this experiment. Will you try? And so, you know, I adored that guy, and I was his partner, and this was very important to him, and I said, okay. But I was still a librarian, you know, with a mind like a librarian. And once I caught how to do it, which I believe anybody can do given, you know, an infinite amount of time, I caught it pretty quickly. I have a gift for it, no question about it. But once I caught it, I started seeing that there was a wide variation between one channeling session and another, and I was like, why? What's going on? So I really pulled everything apart in figuring it out. And I figured out, number one, I need to come to the table as tuned as I can possibly be to my highest and best self. And then I need to challenge a spirit in the name of whatever I would live for and would die for. In my case, that's Jesus the Christ. So I challenge in the name of Christ. I say, can you say that Jesus is Lord, just like it says in the Bible? I follow those directions. Very simple. And when I get a negative entity, they cannot say that. They can't. It's just like walking into a brick wall. They fade away. And they're gone. And that protects the channel. The other thing that you can do is watch the questions that are asked and do not allow questions to be asked that are fear-based or that are specific. My statement to people was always this: is this question going to be as interesting as it is now in 10,000 years? If the answer is no, then it's not a good question for a spiritual channel. So with those two things in mind, my channeling sessions evened out a lot and started getting, you know, reasonably good. I still feel that I have a far piece to go before I have learned how to do the very best channeling that a person can do. But I will admit that it's better than it was by a googob. And so I've written this down in a book, and nobody reads it. Because when spiritual, psychic people get a channel, they're just so sure that this is it. They don't check it. They don't challenge. And they don't watch their questions. If you look at some of the more famous and long-lived channels, you'll see that they began very spiritual, and then the questions started getting very specific and very fear-based. And so negative information started coming in. And this happens over and over and over. Now, the last of the question was, why does a person want to make prophecies when there's really nothing there to prophesy? And he's just sort of making it up out of, you know, thin air. I believe it's a question of ego. It feels so good to be talking about something so dramatic. You know, people love it. People eat, they just eat it up with a spoon. And, you know, it just feels so good. The problem is, you know, they make a prediction, and then the time comes and the prediction doesn't work. And, you know, I have no idea what David will do now, but what happens to most people is they make another prediction and, you know, move everything a few years into the future so that they'll be right for a while, and then people again will follow them. Why do people follow them? I said that at the very beginning. Because they don't have any idea of how strong and wise they are. They haven't used their discrimination. They haven't used their minds. They have just glommed on to someone that they love and admire. And what you need to do is not do that. You need to take everything with totally a grain of salt, read it and see how you like it. If you don't like it, move on to something else. Don't ever try to make it work. You know, just this is your spiritual life. You know, this is important. Use your discrimination and stay with those things that make you feel that you are truly on the right track. Mickey, Monica, you got anything to add?
I would just underline what you said about the glamorous part of prophecies for both the channeled who makes them and for people who listen to them. We like good stories. We are enthralled by a good story. We all want to be part of a hero's journey. And sometimes it seems easier to be a part of somebody else's journey than it is to be a part of our own journey. So, like you said, we need to use our own discrimination and to be careful what kind of information we allow inside our spiritual tapestry. We're all weaving our own path. And we can do an excellent job. And there is information out there that is helpful. I think using our intuition in order to find that is what we really need to do. And sometimes it's not hard. It's not easy to do. It's difficult. It takes an effort on our part. And sometimes people just really take the easier path. So we need to be careful, be discriminatory.
Talking about moving the dates further back, just today I was talking to a friend and I mentioned something about, well, we didn't go poof last week, so I guess we can plant a garden and plan the next year. Kind of cool. And she's, oh, but everybody's saying it's going to happen in February.
Well, I like the thing that you had up on your site. You said, if anybody believes that it's time for everything to go poof, please leave your items of value at my house before you go.
Yeah.
I like that. That
exactly. Exactly. Okay, thank you. Okay, I think we have time for just one more question, and this one is also kind of long, so I'm going to skim over it as well. This is from Yasarian, and Yasarian had a strange experience. I'm going to condense this part with a big scary demon after going to an occult temple. He said it felt like his body, it was near the midsection of his body. He looked at the demon. It was scary. And he basically realized that the demon was actually inside of him, so he took it inside of him. Okay? And then I'm going to read his actual question. I have a theory. I actually invoked the demon, and now I'm more demonic and evil. Now it's deeply attached to me, and I can't escape. So attached that I don't even identify it as other and evil. Perhaps if I didn't conquer it at all by trying to see the self in the other, but rather I just allowed it to attach in such a way that I no longer felt it to be distasteful. So then right after that, he joined a cult, a Luciferian cult, and wants to know if he has become more evil. He also asks, what is love, if not union? To me, to love things means to be open to union, though not forcing of it. I think I'm more evil because people on this forum are judging me as more evil. I'm angry, for instance, more angry and less concerned with love. Rather, now I think the love brigade of people are kind of going overboard. They're unbalanced. I actually think I was more evil back then because I was puffed up with self-righteousness. This is the first Luciferian cult I've joined, but before then I would be in really lovey-dovey cults. Okay, so I'm going to skip over part of this. He says he's still STO. Basically wants to know, did he, you know, take in something evil, or was it a part of him that he just acknowledged? Let's see, last little part I'm going to read. I found the demon scary, but does that mean it was evil? Was it STS? Who can even know? It's not easy to judge someone's polarity, let alone an entity that is just a subjective visualization. I'm sure lots of bigots see other races as evil, black, scary demons, yet that isn't true. So I don't know what it was, but it seems to have come from this occult lodge, and it seems to have been integrated into me in a perfectly comfortable way. Maybe I'm just picking up hitchhikers. Maybe I vacuumed up a spirit and absorbed it into my own, and I'm cool with that. Okay, so that's what he would like to know your thoughts on. Are you there, Carla? Jim? Uh-oh. I wonder when I lost them. Okay, got a technical difficulty here. Hold on. Okay, seem to have lost Carla and Jim. Sorry about that. I have no idea what happened. This happened a week or two ago. They just kind of vanished. And we are actually almost out of time anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and read the closing and apologize for the technical difficulties. We'll be back next week. And Carla and Jim, if you happen to come back, just start talking. But you've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Please visit llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website featuring the Law of One material, over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring4th.org. And you can submit questions at bringforth.org, go to the Bring Forth 2 forum, and post to the thread discussion Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. We're here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. You can call in live at 646-595-2294. That's 646-595-2294. And just hit the one key if you would like to join the show. And you know what? I'm just going to hold on another minute and hope that they join us. And if anybody's got a question or comment, you can put it into the chat room. Just hang on and see if they come back. You made it back. Hey, are you there? Okay, Carla, I still can't hear you. Oh, lost him again. Oh, well, we tried. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and end the show because it's just a couple of minutes left anyway, and apparently Carla and Jim were having some technical difficulties. They just called back in, but as soon as I got them back on the show, they disappeared again. So sorry about that. You've been listening to In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty, and we will be here next week at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And hopefully we won't have any technical difficulties, and we'll redo that last question. We'll start with that question next week. So see you then.